Very good evening to you. Friday night, 7 o'clock. As always, it's time for us here at 100.8 Revival FM for Revival Football. Myself, Callum McDonald, and as always, joined by Dennis Newell and Andy Millen. Where do we start tonight? How does FIFA grab you? A lot happening there. Jerome Champagne flinging his hat into the ring today. That's a topic of conversation. One thing FIFA have encouraged over the last few years, however, as well as the quality and everything that's good about the game and everything else, they've also been encouraging the rise of the women's game. And we'll have Helen Templeton from Motherwell FC, Motherwell Ladies FC, discussing how their season has gone. Quite a successful season for Motherwell. So we'll be discussing that. Probably looking at Glasgow City, their exploits in the Champions League, a recent exit to Chelsea, we'll be discussing that. As well as obviously a look at domestic football. I don't think we can really have a football show on a Friday night without discussing Celtic on the Thursday night. Not only one topic of conversation out of that game last night. That's obviously Chris Common's reaction to being substituted by manager Ronnie Dyler. We'll get the thoughts of the two guys in the studio, one an ex-player, coach, and obviously Dennis Newell, the ex-manager. And we will start, as always, with Dennis, the man to my right. How are we tonight?
I'm fine, Cam, yourself?
Not bad at all, not bad. Now, where do you want to start? Will we start with FIFA, or will we look at the UEFA Trophy Cup, whatever it is, for last night?
We'll start with the brown envelope boys and then move on, I think.
Allegedly brown envelope
yes,
boys.
Yes, that's it.
We've not really given it much airtime over the last couple of weeks, Dennis, but there has been a lot happening, and there's been a lot happening in FIFA over the last couple of years, to be fair. But allegation, counter-allegation, so much behind closed doors at FIFA now. Obviously, we have the expulsion or suspension, or whatever you want to call it, of Platini, of a few other guys, obviously, as well. Blatter himself, Beckenbauer, his name getting flung into the ring as well, as being a party in all of this. FIFA, it is undoubtedly appears to be a corrupt
organisation.
Thank you very much. Sorry, my old mind went blank there. It certainly does appear to be corrupt. What do we do? How do we resolve the problem with the organisation responsible for looking after football?
The simple answer from me is, I don't know. You know, we look at the domestic scene that we normally talk about every week, and you know, there's enough issues there that we find that we can maybe put our finger on a little bit, but we don't know how deep this goes. It almost looks like mafia terms, if you want to call it that. That, you know, there's that side of it, and how do you eradicate it? It's also like you've got this bad element in the world with drugs. How do you eradicate that? They've been trying to do it for years, and it's not happening. And I just think that FIFA is almost the same without actually knowing too much about it. All I know is what you hear in the news, and we've been worldly, how much are we actually seeing, especially when Americans get involved, and from the legal point of view. So I honestly don't know to the extent of it, or is it the tip of the iceberg that we see Platini and all the rest of them, Blatter, getting the finger pointed at them, you know. It's no world crimes in my eyes, but there is a lot of exploitation at some nations here, and I just don't know what they're really about, Cammy, to be honest.
That's really the thing, Andy, is it appears to be a lot of the exploitation of various things, you know. I mean, you've got Blatter, who's alleged to have given Platini a nice wee 1.1 million bung for something. Nobody's, I think, said what the 1.1 was for. Okay, there's this invoice, and it was for a work behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff, you know. But what's he supposed to have done to earn the 1.1 million? What good does it come him getting the 1.1 million. I just fail to see, as Dennis says, they're doing something wrong, but nobody can really put their finger on what it is they are doing wrong.
The sad thing about the organisation of, if you want to say, that runs world football, you know, it is, unfortunately, it's corrupt. And unfortunately, people like getting their palms wetted by the whatever it is, euro, dollar, cash. And unfortunately, even the people at that level, they don't really need the money, it's just greed. And unfortunately, it's like legalised fraud they're doing. But unfortunately, to clear that out, you need to start again.
Pretty much, because
you'll never find the trace. You'll maybe find somebody somewhere is releasing the money, but you will never ever find the true man where it all comes from, really.
I mean, Dennis, we're looking at an organisation that essentially should be a charity. You know, let's be honest, it should be a non-profit making organisation run for the good of the game rather than the good of the people who run the organisation. And it doesn't appear to be so. You know, we should have a situation there where the money should be getting ploughed back into football. We look at the situation there and all the good that FIFA could potentially be doing, and it doesn't seem to be doing it.
I think there's an element where there is money put into different nations where there is a benefit, and it's probably just to justify their existence on it. But we don't need to look any further on their doorstep. And the statement you made there is an organisation. You look at the ticket money prices for our internationals recently. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me that our SFA is no coining it in? Well, the coaching courses that kids are actually paying to go to. So we don't need to look any further on our doorstep. It's not in the same financial structure that FIFA's got, but if you look at it, it's no charitable organisation by any manner or means, and non-profitable. I don't think that's the case. I think we've got people in there in the SFA who are only looking at profit, and it'll be the same in FIFA. They obviously want to bring in as much from, you look at the major sponsorships they've got, and the distribution, as we normally see, the wealth goes to the wealthy. It doesn't filter down into the smaller nations or smaller clubs or whatever it would be. And that's in every walk of life, by the way. We're not just talking football. And that's the way, and I keep using that word, society, that we live in now. And Andy used the word, and it's greed. It's total greed that drives it forward.
You only have to look at the Qatar bid that it went through. Now, I'm sure it's a lovely country, wealthy country, but it's not practical to go and play football there, isn't it? Yet they're going to be building 7 or 8 brand new stadiums that once the World Cup finishes, they'll never get used again.
No.
But the kind of money that that country has obviously plied individuals and a group of people has been worth taking it there, which not for a football point of view, but financially it is.
Yep.
If we look at the wealth from the Middle East or Asia, the British game would be in a worse state if these people weren't ploughing money into it. And I say worse state because you wouldn't have the same support or the same progression that the Man United's and maybe they're the wrong team to use.
But Manchester City obviously are funded by the Kuwaiti royal family, aren't
they? So there's an element that comes from the Far East and Asia that without it, we would struggle. And you don't mind it going there, but FIFA, if we look at FIFA, what have they actually done for me in terms of global football and filtering back down to the grassroots? To me, all I've actually produced is a card that says no to racism, that I can go back to when I was managing. We had to stand out in the middle of the park and show these wee daft cards when common sense says, of course you shouldn't be a racist. You don't need FIFA or UEFA to come along, give you a wee card and say, hold that up like you're some school kid. And that, to me, is the only pathetic thing that they have done that I can relate to. So the contribution with the millions or billions, if you want to go near that point, from major sponsors is not being used properly.
Well, they shout say no to racism and then they go and give a World Cup to probably one of the most racist countries on the planet in the shape of Russia.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of obviously if you're black and you're in Russia, you're a constant victim of abuse. So there's a conflict there right away, you know, between what they're saying and actually what they're doing.
So every element of society that we look at, FIFA's got an involvement that contradicts what they're really there to do. And that, in my eyes, is to improve the game of football. Yep. And you've got dinosaurs there, and Platini, who I thought would have been a breath of fresh air when he got the job at first, has just jumped on the bandwagon. And he, his contribution to me, again, has been very, very similar. So much so, I think he's the man that didn't want the technology or goal line technology. I mean,
no, he just wants to stick a couple of dummies behind the the goals, you know what I mean?
That's at a cost, again, that probably the cost in relation to European ties with that, as you say, dummy at the end, on the goal line, if that would keep
with
probably...
With complete utter respect to dummies, of course.
No, I know that, but the thing is, you probably could keep our second division in Scotland going with the money that's paid throughout Europe for these guys to do nothing. Well, it's a waste.
You only have to look at the English Premiership, how well that's done in the few incidents they have with the ball being in. No, you don't need that assistant at the byline who has to wear his gloves and his tights and everything else because he doesn't really move about because he's not got a lot to do. Mm-hmm. But with the money that's in the game, the television cameras that are all top games, they all should have about the English Premiership. And there's no problem that with the money.
No, I mean, that's the thing. If FIFA concentrated as much on grassroots, you know, and ploughed money into grassroots, which maybe they are doing, you know, you see in some of these sports programmes of a morning, well, this initiative in the Middle East or this initiative in Africa or this initiative in again, I don't say it with any lack of respect, some backwater country somewhere. You know, they are doing something for grassroots football. I'm struggling with my words tonight. At third world countries, you know, developing nations. Yeah. They are doing something there, fair enough, you know. And they do appear to do some good. But it is the brown envelope and the absolute power corrupting absolutely.
It's sad that the people who run our game at that level, that's where it's came to.
Yeah.
You know, but whether or not will it ever change? Who knows now?
Well, my worry is, Andy, is obviously there was a lot of alleged jolly mandering with fraud or whatever else you want to call it behind the scenes for the Qatari bid, and yet the leading figure who is the favourite now to take over at FIFA is Sheikh something or other, you know, or Sheikh so-and-so, you know, or Sultan, whatever, from obviously the part of the world where gerrymandering has been done, you know. The lad today as well who's flung his hat into the nation, hat into the ring, from one of the African federations, you know, that the lad, what is it, Tokyo Sex Wally, you know, he's flung his hat into the ring today. You've got Champagne, who's obviously guilty by association, you know, an 11-year association with Blatter. You know, so, yeah, we rip it up and start again, but where does that leave us in the meantime?
Well, what will be down to also the people who want to run for it, and we're down to the countries who vote them in.
Yeah.
But again, it'll go back to what's happened with Blatter.
Yeah,
there's no doubt.
Yeah.
They'll be influenced by the penny.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
So this will go on for years. Yeah. Absolutely unbelievable, the money that's been taken out of the game. And again, I repeat, I don't know that much about it, but we can only comment what we see in the media, and it's not very healthy. Football, you would have thought, was a game for entertainment for Joe Bloggs in the street, and it's gone miles and miles away from the ordinary guy in the street now.
Well, it was actually on the news before I came here. They were saying that in Europe, Scottish football's the fifth priciest to get
it. Expensive.
Huh? I couldn't believe that.
Mm-hmm. But I think we touched on that last week where I said we need to get back to looking at getting
fifth,
seats filled, and the only way
you in Europe.
And you need to get back to addressing this and starting to look at the fact that the seats need to be filled, and they need to be, say, at £10. Players are not getting it in Scotland wages wise. And it's simply because the crowds are no big enough. We've drifted away, Cammy, for what your point is. I'm sure we'll go back to the pricing of games as we go on. But FIFA, major problem. I don't know how to resolve it. All I can do is listen and look and say, well, take an awful lot wiser man than me to be even thinking, where do you get the root of this? As Andy said, you'll never get to the source.
No.
But it does come back to the phrase, and it is true in this instance. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And wherever we go, you know, whether it's you, me, Joe Bloggs in the street, whatever, the temptation is always going to be there. You know, that if somebody turns around and says, well, here a wee tenner for you, any chance you could look favourably on so-and-so, the temptation for most people is going to be that's going to be there for them. So when you turn around and say, well, there's £1.1 million, you know, of a bung for you, that temptation is going to be phenomenal, whether you've earned it or not in previous existences.
But the unfortunate thing, Cammy, is I wouldn't think, and I don't really know, obviously, anybody's business, but I wouldn't think a Michel Platini needs...
Well, you wouldn't imagine he needs a million.
I wouldn't imagine so. But, again, as you say, what life comes down to, whether, again, everybody's got different situations in their life, is down to your morals and principles.
Yeah.
Tell me, everything will come down to that.
But, you know, we have this thing now, and the person that actually mentioned it a while ago was Gordon Strachan. He says, nowadays, there's no morals whatsoever in football. And that just highlighted it for me, because the bottom line was there isn't. Absolutely none.
Society's dramatically changed from even in my time. Born in 65, but the way you were brought up as a kid in your late, early 70s up to the 80s, isn't it? Just different now, Kelly.
Just comes back to it all, isn't it? You know, we could judge everything by how society's moved on. But the frightening thing is, these guys are a lot older than everybody around this table, even yourself, Dennis.
Yeah, which is an achievement in itself, which I could do with a brown envelope. It would be brilliant. No, the temptation, as you say, is there. It makes me cringe, though, that's the state that we've got ourselves into. It's no matter of surviving. And I go back to that word, and it is sinful, and it is greed. Greed is driving most things forward nowadays. People are not content with their lot. They just want more and more and more. And if you give them £1,000, they want 2,000. And I don't know where that comes from. I just don't know where it comes from. But that in most walks of life, believe you.
More and more for doing less and less.
That's right.
Yeah, that's one of these things. Anyway, moving away, because it's probably far too complex a proposition for the three of us to be debating for much longer. Getting back to more simple things. And I had one of the guys in work telling me this morning, you need to watch that comments thing last night. Obviously, I can only look at it in isolation. I didn't see what surrounded it. I only seen the YouTube footage this afternoon. It looked pretty ugly, I think, to a neutral, to be fair, Commons' reaction to being substituted. We've seen the throwing of the water bottle or the throwing of the jacket by various players. But to sit in the stand and publicly berate your manager or your assistant manager as vehemently as what Commons has done definitely doesn't look good for Celtic, doesn't look good for Ronnie Dyla, doesn't look good for Chris Commons. But as I say, I can only look at it in isolation. I don't know anything that surrounded it. Dennis, if one of your former players was to treat you like that after you'd subbed him, how would you be towards him? Would you accept his apology the day after? Would you consider him for selection on a Saturday?
First and foremost, Andy and I spoke before we came in here. We have had our rants to managers and coaches. Everybody does it, right? The thing is, with the Old Firm especially, you're in the spotlight, European tie, even worse. You stuffing your face, Cammy, while we're talking here?
I am. I'm having a wee power bar just now, Dennis. Part of this keep fit regime that I'm on.
I just heard the munching there. So it's nothing new for players to actually have a rant or have a go at the coaches or managers if they're taking off. That's called passion. Nothing else. No player wants to be taken off. From my point of view, I have had that. I've had the player that I took off and actually burst a hole in the dressing room door as he came in. And that was the last kick he had at the club, though. I just let him go.
Was it any better than the first one he had?
No, if he'd kicked as well as that in the park, he wouldn't have been taking off. But the thing is, the players will do this, and it's an acceptance within the organisation. Now, if you notice, wasn't it Ronnie Dyla that he had to go at? It was John Collins, who sits there, bulletproof to a point at that club. Absolutely no contribution last night. Did he know why he got his perm actually wet? Because I tell you what, I never seen him out on the touchline watching the game. Did you, Andy?
No.
Don't think so. Neither did the boy Kennedy. So you look at it and you say to yourself, what's their contribution? It's wrong. First and foremost, he shouldn't have done it, right? There's a time and a place for it. But he was so heated. And in the moment, he's in the dugout, remember, when he does it. He has a go after he shook hands with the player coming on. He's been proper in that front. He's let the player go on the park, and then he's made a beeline, no for the manager, into the dugout, having a go at them. Right. That's nothing to do with the playing side then. He's off the park. So the cameras picks it up because the game's that bad. They're looking for something to actually highlight the night. On the back of what he should have done is contained it being at that level till he gets in the dressing room. Now, in my eyes, he probably was right, because you look at Johansson, for whatever reason, Ronnie Dyler's brought him over here and thinks he's a Gareth Bale. Never in a million years is he Celtic quality, and I've said that all along. Brown, I'm even hearing in another radio station, a Rangers supporter being perfectly honest and saying, look, the guy's done, and it's no having a go at Celtic. And I listened to the bloke, wasn't he a biased Rangers supporter? Now people are beginning to sit up, which I've been saying for about 3-4 months. Brown is past his sell-by date. And other than a square pass, don't play in that team with him. You've got Griffiths in that team. How many balls have played through to him last night? The guy must be running about like a headless chicken, getting nothing out of it. So when you get taken off and you're seeing two players in the middle of the park that have not contributed anything like what you've done, that frustration just boils over. And unfortunately, the cameras pick it up. For me, if you're the manager, you think you've done right. So he's in trouble. But when you look at from everybody outside, the manager's a mile out. I'll be taking him off in my eyes. So there's the problem. Everybody will look at it and go, he's out of order. But so is the manager for taking him off. Two wrongs don't make a right. He's apologised today, apparently. And for me, you move on from it. He's no bigger than the club, but I think he's quite entitled to his opinion. Unfortunately, he did it when there's a camera down his throat.
Andy, sitting at work this morning, and as I say, I hadn't seen it at all. I heard some of the guys in the canteen talking about it this morning. Obviously, a few of them Celtic supporters, and they're talking about if only the rest of them had the same passion, we wouldn't have been in the position we're in. That's a comment, again, it's been echoed on social media. Various outlets today as well from Celtic supporters. They did comments. It does appear he's showing passion. It does appear he's frustrated. Obviously, whether it's the performance of Celtic, whether it's the frustration of the substitution and whatever else, it's all boiled over last night. But as Dennis says, airing it publicly is not the right place to do it. But this is a guy who I think there was questions over his Celtic future. In the summer, Dyla put that to bed, but obviously that must raise the questions again last night.
Well, I think first and foremost, when the manager takes you off, most players, their pride is a wee bit dented at times, if you want to say. Their team's getting beat. There's a frustration in how the team's played last night. Coming off the park, as Dennis quite rightly said, he actually acknowledged Shifty, it was coming on, and then he has his, if you want to say, strop or whatever you want to call it, in the dugout. Unfortunately, in the modern day game, cameras are everywhere. And really, he should have left that, as Dennis says, just kept his fire. He went into the dressing room. If you want to have a rant. But the bottom line is, whether you think the manager's right or wrong, he will always be right in his eyes. He's made a change. But Commons certainly is somebody who, middle to front, when you're needing goals, whether it be for set pieces, whether it be for wider areas, He can create something, no doubt about that. But again, Ronnie Dyler's got a belief in his way of playing.
Yep.
And he doesn't change that. He won't change that. And he made a statement saying, I didn't want four strikers on the park because we're not going to get anything out of that. You're down 3-1 everybody's got different beliefs. You're better getting beat 4-5-1. You're out of the game anyway. But it shouldn't be aired in public. It should be done behind closed doors. But again, what Dennis says, I've been there, I've let myself down and said things I shouldn't have said. But the good managers and good coaches, they're big enough, ugly enough to say, it's done. And that's it. And one guy I speak about him all the time, and one here, the guy Tommy Burns. Tommy Burns could give you a horrendous time when the game finishes. He really could. I mean, people perceive this as a really nice guy. He's a top, top guy, but really passionate. He could really, really give you a really tough time right after the game. He could walk in, get a shower and come back out, and that was it done.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what Ronnie Dyler is a person, John Collins, John Kennedy, but again, quite rightly say, as Dennis says, it wasn't the manager actually was berating. It was actually both John Kennedy and John Collins. He was having a disagreement, we'll say. And it will be interesting to see on Sunday, one, is he in the squad, and two, is he selected to play. That will be, there'll be some people saying, no, he shouldn't be playing on Sunday, punish him. But if you believe he's good enough to play,
he's taking him off because he's taking him off because he feels that he's not got enough to go and win that game for them. Don't care what he talks about, four forwards or whatever. Tactically, I think he's a nightmare for it to be at Celtic Football Club. Absolute nightmare. If you look at it, he was the only person in that team coming from the midfield that had an opportunity to score, which he did. So you say to yourself, why take off the one guy that's maybe going to drag you back into this game? Because at 3-1, you're saying to yourself, we're right in this fixture if we can get another away goal.
I just think sometimes,
because, you know, in the last 9 minutes, you're then in the position, you go and sneak something. It takes him off. And I'm saying to myself, I know he stuck a forward up there, but that forward is no, in my eyes, ready for Europe. Definitely no ready.
Just, but when you look at it for football terms or coaching point of view or whatever, in Scottish football, the way he's set up to play is fine. The two fullbacks get pushed right on, they dominate games. When the first goal happened, Izzy Gary wasn't even in the camera shot. He was nowhere near. And the actual boy has got it on the right-hand side of the park. And the left fullback on the opposite side where the ball is, he's not anywhere near the camera shot. So see, by the time, see as soon as you lose the ball, that's where the ball gets stuck. It gets stuck with the left back, really, in a normal practice, they'll say, if that's good, ball's been doing one side of the park, the fullback got a wee bit higher, but tucked in a bit. He'll be touched right on the touchline, because that's the way Ronnie Dyler believes the game should be played, high and wide, open the pitch up. But if you lose the ball where they did right away, they put it down on its side, and that's where the first goal happens.
But at any level of football, you have a captain on the park that orchestrates it, right? And not just the one captain. Normally in a back four, and you know this, Andy, you have somebody that's talking. Now, what happens is, if it breaks down on one side, you pull your fullback in and you tuck in.
Dennis, I was talking to somebody today, I don't know if he mentioned his name, he actually made a great point. He's a manager, and he actually said, you're talking about leaders, just what you're talking about, but go through Celtic's back four, Izzy Gary, Boyata, centre-back,
Ambrose,
and Lustig. Your goalkeeper, Scottish, is the only one that if me and you are on the park, can quickly translate, talk. You're talking there. How is that going to happen on the park?
Was the point I was going to expand on, is the fact that you have a communication through language. But these guys that we've just mentioned there, Issa Gary's having the worst season he possibly could have. And I think that's because there's nobody in central defence to actually orchestrate him and tell him where to go.
Well, you've lost your two centre-backs last
season.
Who
were quality,
Van Dijk.
So if you look at the two that are in the centre, young boy, Ayata and Ambrose, they struggle to control their own game. Yeah. Now, you know yourself, Andy, if you're struggling your own game, the last thing you can be interested in is dictating to the rest of the team where to go, what to do. Yep. You have enough up in your head going on, and it's like a toy shop that you're basically saying, right, where am I going to be? You're not worrying about your fullback. Now, that is lack of signing quality. That's a big problem Celtic have got, that they have got players in the team who are not at the standard of European football. As you rightly say, it's telling us something as well about the Scottish Premiership. If these guys are getting torn apart by, I would say, mediocre Norwegian team. But they can't talk and communicate with each other, or that their goals would never have been created. They are total errors through lack of communication. When I looked at it, and they're just spread all over the place, and I'm thinking, they're just interested in looking after number one, and they're like rabbits in the headlights. They really were. And it is really dreadful when you look at the outcome that Ronnie Dyla seems to accept it and no shore it up.
You're talking about an average mid-table Norwegian side. This is a side who are currently sitting seventh in their National League, a massive amount of points behind the leaders, Rosenborg. And yet in Scotland, we're the fifth most expensive place to watch football in Europe, probably massively behind countries like Norway in terms of what it's going to cost to watch a game of football over there. But we can't produce a side for all that money that must be generated in the Scottish game in Celtic that can even compete with a mediocre average side.
Yeah, but we have to go back into where this all stems from. And I've said it for day one, the appointment was the wrong one, and it's now coming to fruition. If we talk Europe, he's doing okay in the Premiership, but that's because the Premiership's weak. It's because we've got links to Aberdeen who are putting up a fight, and then all of a sudden they turn up at St Johnstone and can't kick the ball. You know, it's things like that that you've got to say, wait a minute, we are really, really weak in other areas when it comes to actually being consistent. And that's the problem we've got in Scottish football.
If you're on your Scottish football just now, unfortunately, without being negative, because I'm involved in it myself, you've got Rangers and Hibs who would probably make it a wee bit tougher for Celtic at Easter Road and at Ibrox. You've got Hearts who have just come up. You've got Aberdeen, who, if you want to say, to be fair to Derek McInnes over the last 2 or 3 years, has vastly improved Aberdeen.
Yeah.
But you're like, say, Camarnocks, your Dundee Uniteds, who are big clubs, they've dipped a bit as well.
Yeah.
So Celtic haven't got the challenge that they would hope for and expect for. But again, getting into Europe, I've said this before, Cammy, we're miles behind in Europe.
Yeah.
And that, again, so-called, and I say so-called because I'm never disrespectful to anybody, so-called lesser nations, but you go into a game like that, you would actually think, right, we'll bed ourselves into the game here. We need to make sure that we stay in the game, make sure we're solid, but no, we just keep playing the same way.
But is it back to the new, they were going to lose players in the summer there, and the manager has got to know this. Now, are we pointing the finger at him and it's no really, it's the board that are the restraint here and he's a whipping boy? We don't know. But the bottom line is, he's never made a replacement for any of the players that have gone of quality. What he always had was a weakness in Ambrose. Always been a weakness. And I honestly felt, come the summer, he'd have been leaving the club because he wasn't at the level of competing in the Premiership, never mind in the European Cup.
True.
Well, so he's never done anything with that.
Well, let's compare the men's game with the ladies' game. But we haven't discussed it on the show for quite some time. We've made passing reference, Dennis, at times to how well maybe Motherwell have been doing, you know, and they did have a very successful season. But we are joined by Dibsy herself, friend of the show, Helen Templeton. Helen, good evening. How are you doing? You're not there. Helen? Guys, you talk away. I'll see if I can find where she is.
Shouldn't be in Motherwell. No, but just as we were saying, Andy, that Celtic have not replaced the players that have gone.
What you're rightly saying is 100%. I don't know if Celtic maybe have got a bit lax in terms of, because Rangers have been in the league, they know they're guaranteed to win the league and also get the opportunity to qualify for the Champions League. So they're maybe been a bit, what would you say?
Shrewd with the money.
Yeah, and also maybe a wee bit took their eye off the ball in terms of, instead of maybe building to get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't did that. They haven't got stronger, I don't think.
No, they've definitely got weaker. And the big problem's going to be when Rangers do come up, Rangers, if by chance they manage to secure one or two players with funding, the big problem we've got is if the management team that's still there at Parkhead are actually people that are bringing these players in, there was a big banana skin waiting there for Celtic supporters because they can't identify good players to bring in. They have not done anything with Mackay Stevens or Armstrong, if we take two as an example, who were doing exceptionally well with Dundee United. They're barely breaking into the first team at Parkhead. So why are they there? Now, that's where you've got to improve these boys.
Even bought the boy Scott Allen. I couldn't tell you the last time Scott Allen played for Celtic.
No, that's right. Not at all. Well, anyway, at least if we've got Helen now, so we'll give that a go now. Helen, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Not bad at all. You're there. That's us. Just hit the right button and we get you on here.
Rid of me already?
No, not at all. Not at all. Your joke, the fight I had to get you on here, there's no way I'm going to try and get rid of you this early. We're talking there about Celtic and obviously the lack of performance for the men in Europe. But first of all, before we come on to Motherwell, if we look at Glasgow City, one of the arguments levelled against Celtic is a lack of competition in Scotland. You could say, say the same thing for Glasgow City and the Women's Football League. Obviously, they win games week in, week out without, it would appear, a great deal of competition. And yet they've had a moderately successful season in the European Champions League this year.
Yeah, I mean, the strength and quality in Glasgow City side is has never been in question, but I think this year they've definitely been ran a lot closer than they ever have been. I work alongside the head ladies coach at my work, and you know, I've been in discussion with him this season about how well his side's coming on, and you know, Hibs have ran them really close twice. I was at a game through in Glasgow when I watched Glasgow City at the home park play against Hibs this season, and Hibs came out with all guns blazing. And you know, they ran them close right the way to the end, and I think it was a last minute equaliser for Hibs that managed to get the point. But they ran them right the way through the game. So for me, Glasgow City are an excellent side. They have been for many years now, but there's certainly teams that are chasing them, and Hibs are one of them. And Hibs are going to run them close next season, I think.
Yep. Obviously, City, as we say, they had a decent season in the Champions League. Ultimately, falling, I think, at the quarterfinals, was it, to Chelsea?
Yeah, they did, but I've been keeping a wee eye on Chelsea this season, and they are again, they're just a wee step ahead, I would say. I don't think City are too far behind them, but the quality in Chelsea side is unbelievable. They just signed, I think it was one of their strikers from one of the English teams, Reading, I think it was, for a 50k sum, so when you're getting in female players for that amount of money, you know that the side's looking for quality and looking to strengthen their squad, and I just don't think City quite matched up then.
Yeah,
but I don't think it'll be long before they get further on in that competition.
Well, the problem is going to be there if for the women's game, you're going to be struffling the same way the men's game are if obviously Roman Abramovich is ploughing money into Chelsea and they're spending £50,000 on a striker.
Oh, money in women's football is long debated. You know, City have I would say a lot more money than most other clubs in Scotland, but until money starts coming into the women's game, you can't really expect anybody to be able to challenge the likes of Glasgow City, who are one of the only clubs in the country who can afford to bring in players from all over the world.
Yeah, and obviously a manager who was a Scotland international in the shape of Scott Booth as well, you know, so they certainly are trying to take the game, trying to take the ladies' game forward, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, forgetting about Glasgow City, you're a Motherwell player. Not a bad season for yourselves. I think you lifted your first medal this season, obviously your first trophy, and ultimately promotion for Motherwell as well.
Oh, it's been a fantastic season, and I think that's what the plan was right from the very start. That's why we have the team we have. That's how we have the quality of players we have on our side, ex-Scotland internationalistic, you know, players that have played down in the Premier League down in England, and a lot of experienced players that have played up in the Scottish Leagues as well. So,
and a media darling in the shape of yourself.
Something like that. you know, we knew what we wanted to do, and our target for this season was to win the league, to win the League Cup, and to get as far as we can in the Scottish Cup. And I think we did all that, and I think, you know, we got really far in the Cup, that we got beaten by Celtic just at the quarters there, and that was to be expected, I think, you know. We came up against a Premier League side in a round earlier, but we beat Huntly Vale. But I think Celtic are just too good a team for us at the moment. But, you know, we mark ourselves as a middle Premier League team, and I think that's where we are. I think we proved that. And with regards to the league, 16 games, won 16 games, not dropped a point. I don't think we could have asked for a better season, to be honest.
No, that's success in anybody's book, Helen. You know, and fantastic, obviously, as I say, you managed to lift a couple of a couple of trophies, a couple of wee bits of silverware as well. Obviously, proving your decision to leave Hamilton and go that short journey over the other side of the M74 to be right. You know, so from a personal point of view, it must have been absolutely fantastic for you.
Oh, I mean, to be honest with you, I wanted to go. I wanted a new challenge. I wanted to try and win trophies, and I wanted to win medals, and I wanted to, you know, build in a new team. And I do often think, you know, what would it have been like if I stayed at Hamilton? And they still do have a big place in my heart. But, you know, I've enjoyed this season at Motherwell. I've enjoyed writing the blogs and being involved in that side of the media side of things as well. And, you know, I've had lots of game time, and that was one of my personal targets as well. So for me, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better season, yep. And I'm really looking forward to what happens next.
So obviously after your promotion from the First Division to the Women's Premier League this season, what are the expectations next season for Motherwell? You're saying a mid-table Premier side. Do you think, obviously, you can challenge for a trophy again next season, you know, in terms of maybe the cup, or can you be one of these sides who can get under the skins of City?
Well, I don't know if you're aware of the restructuring with the Women's League at the moment. We're actually in the second division this season. We were a new team that started only 2 years ago, so they had a league to kind of bed season to bed in, and then they've had a good, this first season here is a season that we've won, and then we'll get promoted into the First Division. But the league restructure sees a Premier League 1, a Premier League 2, and a First Division next season, so it will be promotion to the First Division. With regards to what I think we can do, absolutely, I think we're there to win it. I don't think there's any question about that. I don't think there's, you know, I've not spoken to the gaffer, but I know that's what he wants, and I know that's what the guys up above us want at the club. So there's no reason why we can't go in and challenge. We've beat every First Division opposition we've played in cups this season, and we've been proved to beat Premier League team this season as well in the cup. So absolutely no reason why we can't go and win that division next season and then be promoted to Premier League 2 the season after.
So that's what I was going to say. So essentially you're in the third tier of Scottish football despite winning your league this year because of the restructuring.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing. Well, I mean, disappointing in one sense, in the sense that, you know, you would be one step closer to the Premier League football, which is what everybody at the club wants, and that's where we want to be. That's where I think we should be. But you've got to climb the ladder like everybody else, and that's what we've got to do. So it's just unfortunate they've done the restructure at this time, because it kind of puts us back a season in a sense. But, you know, I'm sure the girls that are at the club at the moment still have a few seasons left in them, and hopefully that's where we'll get eventually.
Hi, Helen. It's Dennis. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Dennis. How are you?
Not too bad, yeah. We still haven't managed along in the months to get a game in. So what's happening now? What have you got left, or is it all finished now for the winter?
No, we've got a couple of games left, actually. We had, on the fixture list, we've got a game this Sunday against Edinburgh Cali, I think, and it's at Perfermill Plainfields in Edinburgh. That's a 3 o'clock kick-off. I know you won't probably want to travel too far for that game, but we've got another game next weekend, the weekend after, which is against Hearts, and that's our last game of the season, and that's at home for us. I think we were trying to get I think originally we were trying to get the stadium for that game, but I'm not sure if that will happen or not. And then we do have a rearranged fixture against, I think it's Partick Thistle, so that's to be fitted in one. I think that might be during the week, so that might be a good one to get along to. We've got 3 games so far left in the league this season.
Well, you keep in touch with Cammy on that. We'll certainly do our utmost to get along, because we keep talking about the ladies' game, but we never actually have the opportunity to criticise it, as you know what I'm like. So definitely we'll need to get along.
I'll definitely give you a wee Facebook message for the dates.
Oh, aye, that's right. I keep getting all these people sending me Facebook invites. So I notice you've got a million people on it. So, yep.
Just make sure if Dennis comes along, we bring a blanket for him. You know what I mean? He's getting to that kind of age, Helen. You know, he wants a tartan blanket along there.
Tartan blanket, a wee chair.
That's it. Yeah. Listen, there's a game along at Fir Park tonight, I believe. Obviously not involving Motherwell, but there is a women's game at Fir Park tonight.
There is. It's actually just appeared on my telly the now. So the women are involved in their qualifying game against, who's it tonight? Belarus. Yep, in their qualifying for the UEFA. So I think, you know, it's a game that is absolutely theirs. There shouldn't be any complaints about that. But I think they just have to not get complacent, because I think with a when you're tipped to win it, you know, the pressure's on you and nobody else. So I think they'll be out to try and make, prove a point tonight.
Helen, on the international front, do you find that normally in the men's game, it's only really the top clubs that get chosen for the international matches? You know, we've seen it when Rangers dropped down the divisions. Players weren't getting picked because they didn't feel that they were at the standard that was needed. Is it the same in the ladies' game? So if we drop down the division, say, to the league you're in, is it still opportunities there where the ladies will get picked for the international team, or is that gap again just too big?
You know, it's a shame because there's a lot of players that play in the lower divisions that, for whatever reasons in their life, can't commit to Premier League football. You know, a lot of people are mums; they've got full time jobs, and they can't commit to four nights training in a week. So, people tend to have the generalisation that if you're the best players in the country, you're playing in the Premier League in the top six teams, or you know, at least the Premier League. But I certainly don't agree with that. But I do agree with what you're saying in the sense that I feel that you tend to have to play for a Premier League to get picked, which I think is a real shame. And if your name's out there previously, having played for other clubs, you tend to be more well known. But you know, when I was a kid, I always remember feeling a wee bit let down that I wasn't able to be easily selected for Scottish national squads and youth squads because I lived right up in the Highlands and I didn't feel that there was certainly as many opportunities. So I'd like to think that they do take a look at the lower leagues and think that there can be equally as much talent down there, because I know at Motherwell there certainly is, and I know most of the people at Motherwell have played high-level football or played for Scotland in the past, the likes of Suzanne Grant and Megan Sneddon. But, you know, there is equally a lot of good talent still in those leagues, a lot of young talent coming up, a lot of youth players that play in these divisions to try and get a bit of experience. So I think they may be missing a trick there. Yep.
But the thing is, I mean, if you're going down level, I understand there's maybe quality players, but it's maybe about the quality of opposition they're coming up against as well and the challenge they have each week. And if you're playing City a couple of times a season, or if you're playing a 4-for-Formentine or Rangers or something like that, you know, in the field you're getting a challenge, it's maybe as much that as getting a game for Scotland, as obviously your natural talent and ability as well. So that there is maybe an element of that. Obviously, Kim Little's going to be a stick on every week. You know, she's going to get a feature for Scotland every time that Scotland play. You know, she is her star player, but I think when you look down the leagues, Helen, it is a wee bit trickier at times to pick somebody who, as you say, maybe can't commit as much as somebody who plays for a Premier League side.
Okay, I think, you know, the likes of Kim Little, she's one of the best players in the world, without a doubt. And from her to come from Scotland, you know, homegrown talent, that's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, she's a Highlander as well, so she must have grown up playing, you know, in remote places in the world. So she's obviously had that opportunity based on her talent. And I think it's true to say, you know, the cream rises to the top. And these guys will be recognised because they're playing at high-level football. But I do think there is a little bit of a... I think with women's football, it's a slightly different, because you do get women playing and young players playing in lower divisions because that's what's available, that's where they live. There's a little bit less money in it, so they can't maybe travel as far. So they're kind of pigeonholed into playing in these particular areas, which might mean they have to play in the lower leagues. But, you know, the quality in the Scotland squad at the moment and the Premier League, certainly top six Premier League teams, you can't fault, and they're there for a reason. So, you know, they should be playing at the top level, and if that means internationally, so be it.
We were just talking earlier, which I don't know if you were listening, but obviously the incident last night in the Celtic game where the player gets taken off and he has a go at the coaches, does that happen in the ladies' game?
You know, if you're a footballer, you know the frustration that happened within a game, and, you know, that was one of the reasons why I left Hamilton, because I wasn't maybe playing as much as I'd like and it was a bit inconsistent. And, you know, you come off and you know, that frustration that you saw from Chris Commons last night, I feel that. I feel that quite a lot, and I've felt it in the past. But it's got to be channeled, and you tend not to see the big kickoffs that are, you know, are public on the pitch, because I think, you know, you're aware, women are equally as aware as men of the respect that you need to have for your gaffer and the respect that you have for the team that you're with. So, you know, I deal with it certainly in different ways. there has been an occasion this season where I might have had a wee yellow card and I was frustrated and I got subbed and I had my little moment, but I had my moment at the right time and I took myself away and had a little word with myself before I did explode. So, you know, I think that's pretty poor from Chris Commons last night. I like the fact that it came from passion and I like the fact that he cares about what he's doing, because if he didn't, he shouldn't be there. But I do think that a man of that calibre and playing at that level should be able to do that at the right time. So it's certainly not something you see often, but I've not seen it in the women's game in a long time.
I'm just having a visual image of a woman doing it and she slaps the coaches with her handbag.
I think that's borderline sexist. No borderline about it.
You know, it was said firmly, tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It happens. You know, things happen in the women's game equally as much as the men do. It's a passion. It's where it comes from, and we're all human. We're not robots. So
no, but that's why I was asking the question whether you know the same desire is in the game in the ladies' match, that if they come off, there is a tendency to maybe just say their piece rather than leave it to the dressing room.
Oh, it happens. It does happen. Yeah. I can't even say it doesn't. I've seen it happen this season in my own squad. Myself personally, I've managed to rein it in, but it's been at the top bubbling over, and I've wanted to just let it rip, but you just can't. And I think it's the respect. The respect, kind of, certainly for myself, comes first for the guys that are coaching and the guys that are in charge.
Right, no bother. Listen, we've not seen you for a wee while. It's great getting a hoodie and a phone, but you've got 3 weeks or 3 games left of the season. Are you going to come in and see us either just before that or after it?
Absolutely, I'll certainly come in. You know, I would have come in tonight. Unfortunately, work commitments and bought a new house, so I've had a few. Going on where I've had to be in and around waiting on people to come in and fix things, but I'm absolutely keen to come in, so just give me a date and a time and I'll make sure I'm there.
Well, tell you what, you tell us when you're available. Drop me a wee WhatsApp before the show finishes and I'll let people know when you're coming in. If you have a wee look at your diary and let us know when you can come in.
That's great, thank you very much. It's good chatting to you again.
You right. Too, Helen. Cheers.
Smashing Helen, cheers pal.
Thanks.
See you later on, right. Cheers now, bye bye. It's nice to hear from her, isn't it?
Yeah, so well since she's been in to the studio. I mean, yep. I don't think she's been in this
She's
season.
Just moved to Motherwell when she came in. Her and Graham, our gaffer, came in, if you remember.
That's right, yes. Very, very
and
good.
And that was the last time. You're going to really get in my wick with that pen. So you do realise that's all that people can hear now for you is click, click, click.
Yeah, I can
And
hear
munch,
it.
Munch, munch for me.
Ah, well, okay.
You know what I mean? So,
it's good enough for James Bond. It's good enough for him. The one thing I didn't want to butt in to the two is talking to Helen. I think it was fantastic when she says they train four nights a week. I mean, that's dedication.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to find out actually how many of the players turn up the 4 nights a week.
Oh, it's busy.
Four nights plus a Sunday.
Yeah.
And I was doing a wee thing a couple of years ago with the SFA, and it was a C licence. And both Celtic and Rangers brought along, I think it was under 16s, girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, really surprised at technically how good they were.
Yeah.
Really good. Really good.
I mean, I've been along, and Dennis is saying he's not seen a game. I've been along to two or three women's games, a couple at Hamilton. I went to see Scotland against Spain, the game at Hampden, a couple of seasons ago as well. Technically, there is definitely ability there. Yeah. I think getting it conjoined and getting it into a team, and you've obviously the obvious failings, I think, with the goalkeeping.
Yeah.
At times, you know, I think that's something that the women do seem to struggle with, you know, and apologies, as I say, to Helen and anybody else. I'm not intentionally trying to pigeonhole someone, but I think if you're looking at the weakest position out of the 11, it's always going to be the keeper. But technically, Andy, the ability that they have, you know, to move and control the ball and everything is fantastic.
Without doubt, as I say, in the couple of weekends I was working there, the girls were great. Fantastic technically, but I'm sure even Helen would agree that then it comes to the power and the pace of the game, you know. And as you say, the goalkeeper size wise, normally if you ever see any of the ladies' games, you're not getting anybody at 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", being a goalkeeper, you know. But I'm sure when you hear of that, the dedication of 4 nights a week, I think it's brilliant. Yeah. Fantastic.
That was the thing that surprised fantastic. Us the night we had the round.
I've actually written that down right away, and she said 4 nights a week. I thought, jeez. Very good.
The first time we had her in, it was in the back. In fact, it was yourself, and I wasn't even here. I was here the first time she was in. It was Parksy had written a a scathing Parsi, article
that's right.
In the Record, and he'd come in and we get Helen in, I think, and she'd done a response, if you like, to Parsi's article on the Record, and in the back of that we got her in, and to hear that they train four nights a week, you know, and I mean she stays through at the time she stayed in Edinburgh, so she was commuting through four times a week for Edinburgh to train, you know, at Glasgow Green, I think it was, they were training, you know, so credit to them for that, and that there is a big commitment because there's no money in it. And she's saying she'll be in 3 or 4 weeks' time.
Okay. Well, I think we might touch on the fixtures rather than the results. Obviously, the disappointment last week was, or this week we should say, was a Celtic result for Scottish football. Obviously, there's a few in the divisions that were maybe a bit of a shock, but I think with the time that we've got left, we really want to be looking, Cammy, at the fixtures, I think, for the weekend. So if we start off tomorrow's games, we've got the Premier League, which is Aberdeen are playing Motherwell, Dundee have Kilmarnock, Hearts have Ross County, Inverness Cali, and St Johnstone, and Partick Thistle are playing Hamilton Accies.
Yeah, Partick Thistle in a wee bit of form.
Yep, but you know that Premier League, when you look at it, you look at Ross County, you know, absolutely frightening the way they're going. It's healthy, but unfortunately what they're not doing is they teams are not beating Celtic to make the league more competitive. Point I touched on earlier on. Is it Celtic are so good? I think they are when it comes to the Premier League, but the gulf is massive when it comes to Europe. So, you know, there's good fixtures there. That Hearts Ross County game will be an absolute cracker.
Well, Tynecastle certainly will be full house as usual.
Moving on to the Championship, we have Dumbarton are playing Falkirk, Morton are playing Alloa Athletic, Queen of the South have got Livingston, and Raith Rovers have got Hibs. Are you taking in the Livingston game tomorrow, Andy?
No.
No, well, that's the answer to that one. Morton against Alloa, I would say that's going to be a banker. Falkirk, I think, will be too much for Dumbarton. And Raith Rovers, a good test against Hibs, but I think Hibs may be just a bit stronger.
Just sneak it.
Yeah, okay. Moving into League One, Brechin have got Albion Rovers, Dunfermline have got Forfar, Peterhead have got Airdrieonians, Stenishmuir have got Air United, and Stranraer are at home to Cowdenbeath. Then we look into the Sunday game, which is Celtic have got Dundee United, and St Mirren have got Rangers. And then we have the League Cup, which is on Tuesday. Inverness Cali have got Ross County, Morton are playing St Johnstone, and on the Wednesday night we have Hearts against Celtic. So there's some decent fixtures there.
Yeah, Scottish Cup weekend tomorrow as well for obviously the lower league clubs. Clyde going up to Formentine, and after the evidence of watching them last Saturday, if they perform at all like last Saturday, they're going to get gubbed, because last Saturday is poor a Clyde performance as I have watched in the last 3 or 4 seasons. Okay, I've been selective about the games I've watched, but honestly, that was murder last week. Absolute murder.
I think that the rerun they've had, Cammy, is maybe coming a bit of an end, and they really need to be keep pushing if they're really going to make a dent in the division.
Yeah, pressure's on, but time's up, guys. Thanks for coming in. Thanks to Helen Templeton. It's 8 o'clock. Good night.